You are listening to the Friends of Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. We will be coming to you each and every day with uncensored, in-depth analysis of everything you need to know to win your fantasy leagues this season. You can follow us on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits or join the Facebook discussion groups www.facebook.com/groups/Friends of Fantasy Benefits. Give us a 5-star review on iTunes and send us a copy or screenshot of it to friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com or on Twitter at Fantasy Benefits for a chance to get into one of our listener leagues or other prizes. Enjoy the show. We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Who would you have to sleep with to become the senior writer over there? Just want to know.
Kind of like a DFS thing. I had the biggest bankroll.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
More like the Drew Frowney.
Oh, wow. That just needs to be edited out. Absolutely the worst thing you've ever said on the show, Pat.
Like, so bad, it's amazing.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
I'm like crying in my own joke right now. I can't get in control.
It's more like Drew Frowney, yeah, because he's a bad pitcher. He sucks at pitching.
You guys are nerds. We get it. Norm.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 191 of the Friends Fantasy Benefits Baseball Podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner and Matt Thompson. Matt, how you doing?
I'm good, bro. Just got done eating dinner, back home from work. Ready to talk some ball. Excited for our guest today.
Me too. Mike, how are you?
I'm doing well. We're up to 191 episodes. How the hell did we make it this far?
We've done 70 already this year.
That's very true. prospect minutes are getting a lot of good feedback as well. Not only that, but the team previews too. So it's been a lot, but I'm shocked. We're almost at 200. It's pretty crazy.
We're less than a week away from, I think, episode 200, or maybe a week and a half from 200. So that'll be huge. Disclaimer tonight, I quit smoking today, so I will be yelling at everybody, including our guest, my friend, Joe Pizzapia of the Fantasy Black Book. Joe, how are you?
Who would you have to sleep with to become the senior writer over there? I just want to know.
I just pretty much bought it.
Oh, okay.
It's kind of like a DFS thing. I had the biggest bankroll.
Oh, I see. There you go.
Joe, how are you doing?
I'm doing really good, guys. It's fun to be talking baseball again. Once New Year hits and I turn the page right to baseball, because it's really hard when you're covering football every week and writing for football and then trying to write a baseball book at the same time. And once football starts to wind down, now we could just focus on baseball. That's the best. So excited. The new book is out and doing well on Amazon. It'll be out on iTunes in a couple weeks. And this is best. This is like preparation time. This is the time we're all getting ready for baseball. And I got to say, after putting the book together this year, I'm really excited. This is a fantastic crop. I think the best group that we've got draft-wise and first-round-wise in a long time. And I think baseball, for the first time, when you look at it overall, guys, it's really – there's a lot of exciting players. Outside of that Jose Fernandez tragedy last year, it's a shame that, we don't have him in this group also. But – you look around and there's so many players under 26 years old that are just really exciting, young, talented players who are going to impact right away. And, I think baseball is finally on a big upswing.
Yeah, it's going to be an interesting year. We're going to talk about a lot of the draft strategies that we are going to be employing or trying to employ this year in drafts. But before we get started on that, Joe, why don't you tell people where you can reach on social media and then give yourself some plugs, because you're doing a lot of awesome things right now.
All right. Well, you got to be careful when you put about, Fantasy Black Book. You got to make sure that you make sure you put baseball in there.
Yeah.
Otherwise, your search, they might come and get your computers. I just, so everybody knows. But yeah, you can go over on Amazon and pick up the new Fantasy Baseball Black Book 2017. Like I said, it'll be on iTunes in a couple weeks because Apple's a pain in the ass. And eventually, They'll accept my work like they always do. You can also hear me on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network now 5 days a week at noon, hosting On Target Fantasy with Jake Seeley and Benny Ricciardi. I also host the Fantasy Black Book Show with Dan Strafford, the one and only Dan Strafford, every Tuesday and Thursday night there too. So you can get the free app at FNTSY Radio. It's free. It's live. It's on demand. It's got some really good folks on there. And honestly, it's some exciting stuff. Nando's on there. Myself, Dan, all the Roto Experts people. So it's a really great group of people and very exciting and free. How do you beat free?
Yeah, free is like my price tag right there.
Have you guys listened at all yet since we launched?
I have.
It's good. I think it's solid work, man.
I try to listen to you a couple times a week. Now that I know it's free, like that was like the one thing. Like, oh man, I'm not gonna be able to hear Joe anymore. And then someone mentioned to me, well, you know, they've got a free app, and I'm like, I'm in. I'm down.
Yeah, free. I mean, God, you know, you don't want to pay to listen to my idiocy. No one wants that. Actually, no. Last Tuesday, we did a really cool show. I did a 2-hour special on the Baseball Hall of Fame. Mm-hmm. And Steve Gardner came on. And I also had Bob Clappish on from the Bergen Record, who actually has a vote for the Hall of Fame. And, you know, you've seen Bob a bunch of times probably on MLB Network. He's a big sports writer in New York. And, you know, someone from Sabre on also, and we picked apart the MLB Hall of Fame. So we're able to do stuff like that, too, which is not just fantasy stuff and a little more outside the box than where I was last time. So that was a really exciting thing. Lots of good stuff going on there.
Well, awesome.
I find myself getting irrationally worked up at some of these people's Hall of Fame ballots they're putting on Twitter, man.
Holy I will get you have no idea. Like I said, 2 hours by myself hosting that show. Of just like me going off about Trevor Hoffman pretty much is.
Yeah, no,
it's a good hour and 45 about me not saying Trevor Hoffman's not a Hall of Famer, but you know, how about that jerk off who didn't vote for anybody? How do you look at that slate of talent and not vote for anybody? That
guy's been a jerk off for years, though.
Yeah, I mean, you just can't do that, man.
Yeah, so I get just pissed when I see people only vote for like 7 or 8 people.
Saw one today with 2 people. It was Larry Walker and Vlad Guerrero. That was it.
So, yeah, there was.
That makes sense.
Didn't I think Pedro
was
Gomez
from Montreal? was that Jonah Carey's ballot?
Oh, right. No, Tim Raines though.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Yeah. My apologies.
Yeah,
I think Gomez of ESPN only voted for 4 people.
Yeah, and he made his career off of Barry Bonds and didn't vote for Barry Bonds. But go figure.
Mm-hmm. Really, he didn't vote for Bonds, Pedro Gomez?
No.
You know, I understand the guys that want to keep it the Hall of Great. Like, I get that. Like, the Hall of Otherworldly. I kind of get that. Yeah, I know this is not where you want to take this show necessarily. But, I mean, I understand that better than I do about the people who make, you know, idiotic votes for people. And I'm glad that next year it's a complete public ballot because now everybody's going to be held accountable. And I think it's great that guys like Steve Gardner, who's in our community, is going to get a vote in 2020 because that's huge because – it's funny, you know, the baseball beat writer, as in tune as they are every day and watching every game and all that stuff, they don't necessarily dive into the analytics as much as we do, and they're not necessarily as informed about what makes these players great as we are as a fantasy community. So if we start to take the reins, like guys like Steve Gardner getting votes, guys, you know, the higher-end fantasy writers, Corey Schwartz, I think that's the future of the Hall of Fame being better overall. I'm really excited. I hope that goes in that trend.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. I mean, it's they need to get some of the old blood out of there, some of the new blood in there.
And they are. It has been a little bit.
Yeah, and I think the public ballots will thin it out even more because people won't be willing to submit, you know, their empty ballots or their 2-person ballots or not vote for Ken Griffey Jr. or whatever it is. You know, and I think maybe we'll actually get a completely unanimous player in the Hall of Fame as well.
Yeah, and you know, the steroid issue and all that stuff, too, like, it sucks because you're getting to a point now where, you know, that is starting to soften because people are saying, hey, you know, you're great. There's a lot of factors about offense in that period. It's not just PEDs. It's watered-down pitching. It's the smaller ballparks. It's the moment right before baseball became really globalized where you had Ichiro and all the guys from Japan coming and you had all the reaping the rewards of the Dominican and Puerto Rican league. You know, those baseball academies, you know, really started churning guys out in the early 2000s, late 90s, you know, so it's that window where, you know, that's all wrapped into why the offense exploded the way it did. And now what baseball is a much more global game, and that's why it's so much better. And not just the PED testing has stabilized it, but the talent level across the board has stabilized it too.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, let's jump into our topics, because we could talk about Hall of Fame all night, but we've got some...
We'll do another show.
Yeah, exactly. We've got enough draft strategy to talk tonight, and then some recent Major League Baseball moves, see how many of those we actually get through within our time slot. So let's start. Is there a specific draft spot in the snake draft that you would prefer this season, Joe?
You know, as I mentioned before, I think this year is the best first round. I know the Black Book always try to do a first round for Roto, for Points League, and for Dynasty Leagues just starting. And this was the easiest first round to put together in 3 years for me. Not a slam dunk. I feel good about all these guys. So for me, I want a later pick. Stats will actually, this has been studied. If you have a pick in the first three picks or the last three picks, that's your 30% higher chance of making the playoffs, because what you're doing is you're getting either a super elite player or you're getting two very good players towards the bottom. Where it's always difficult in every draft and every sport is in the middle. Most championship teams do not come from the middle. And there's been studies about it. It's actually quite fascinating. I've read some of them where, you know, they've really tracked this stuff. And that's the reason why. So for me, because it's so deep this year, I actually want to be at the very bottom. So give me the wheel, give me down there, and I'm very happy. You know, if I can be one or two and take Mike Trout or whatever, yeah, that's great, that's terrific. But the middle is always some place I stay away from, because I'd always rather be taking advantage of other people's mistakes rather than being in that sandwich in the middle, constantly having to react in snake drafts to, to runs and things like that, because that's what happens a lot to you in the middle.
Yeah, this is a year, though, that I'm okay with being in the middle, and I'm really okay with being in any spot this year, because like you said, I feel like the first round or two is extremely deep, depending on the size of your league. But this is a year that I don't mind being at, 7, 8 in a 15-team draft, because I really feel like I'm still getting pretty good value most of the time in both the first and the second round. And then after that, it's kind of a crapshoot anyways, depending on how your league drafts. So this is a year that I like being at 6, 7, 8, because I'm seeing guys like Jose Altuve, who I have as my number two overall player, falling to 7, 8, 9, 10, and I'm gonna take advantage of that value this year. And I'm seeing a lot of guys slip into the second round that I don't think should. You know, Miguel Cabrera is currently like the number 15th first baseman. He's gone as low as 24th in NFBC leagues. Like, that to me is amazing value. Charlie Blackman slipping down, Corey Seager slipping down. So I'm totally fine with being in the middle this year. It's kind of my preferred spot, which is weird because typically I like to be on the outside. I like to have kind of my back-to-back picks on the end, either at the beginning or the end. So, Mike, what are your thoughts on this? Do you have a specific draft slot you like?
Yeah, you guys have pretty much hit on a ton of the points. It's pretty interesting the first round this year. If you look at the first round last season, there really wasn't a lot of guys that tumbled outside of the list now. You know, Andrew McCutchen was one guy that was going, in the top 15 last year that kind of fell out of the whole entire conversation now. But, either way, we're looking at pretty much, close to the same crop of players we were looking at in 2016. And I feel comfortable, like I always do, in the front or in the back. I would prefer this season to be towards the bat, because I think that the talent level, like Joe kind of mentioned already, is kind of close to the top part as well. And Mookie Betts was a guy that was taken at the end of the first round last season, and obviously Trey Turner is a hot topic this year, but he could, if everything broke right, be another guy that goes in the top three next season as well. So I would prefer to be in the back end, but I don't really mind any spot this season, just because the talent seems to be fairly even, throughout the whole entire top of the draft. So I'm pretty much okay anywhere.
Matt, what about you? Do you have a specific spot you like?
No, I'm right there with Mike, man. If I get to pick something, I mean, if I can't be number one overall and grab Trout in a 12-team league, give me 11 or 12 and give me two picks on the turn. So, I mean, the talent, like you guys have all hit on, every one of you is deeper. I'm not really against any particular spot, but if I get to choose, it's definitely in the back end or at the top. No brainer, right?
Yeah, exactly. Is there any position that you consider to be extremely shallow or really deep this year, Matt?
Well, we all talk about how first base is unusually shallow this year. I mean, you look, You got Adrian Gonzalez as high as 14 in NFBC. And I mean, guys like Brandon Belt, Napoli, Tommy Joseph, it falls off pretty quick. Third base is deceptively deep. I mean, you got guys like Justin Turner and Michael Franco, Evan Longoria sitting outside your top 10 in that position. Catcher is thin, but that's to be expected. Outfield is actually deceptively shallow to me too in the middle. I think you can get a lot of values toward the end in outfield, like if you throw toward the back end of the draft. But I think in the middle part of the draft, it's not too user friendly, I guess I'll say. So it's interesting year, that's for sure.
Joe, what are your thoughts on this? You do a lot of positional value stuff in the Black Book. So is there a position you're targeting or staying away from because they're either really deep or really shallow?
Yeah, absolutely. And the thing that I do, which is something that no one else can do or does, is I can quantify this. You know, everybody else can talk about it. You're going to see rankings from everybody and all this stuff and this guy over this guy. But I'm going to tell you how much better each guy is than the other guy. And that's what relative position value does. You know, in a 24 pool where you're, you know, a 12-team league where you're using middle infielders, Jose Altuve is a 40% RPV. That means he's 40% better than the mid-range fantasy league average second baseman that's going to be starting in your league. And it goes all the way down to the negative. And that's, you know, and then after that, Robinson Cano is a 28.5%. And understanding the drop-off and where that goes, and then when you get down to the middle, you know, where the guys like Odor and LeMahieu and Ben Zobrist is that middle spot, you know, those are the break-even guys because of their skill set and what they do. And that's the difference, and that's what RPV does. And that's why it is number one every year, because people see this and go, oh, that makes sense. And most baseball people are generally smarter than other fantasy people because they will – this is true. This is absolutely true. They will read and they will take the time, and you can actually throw something out at them like this, and they will grasp it and go, oh, that's logical. And they will put it to – you know, the baseball mind works very logically. This year, second base is very deep. I think second base is an outstanding crop. When you can go down to, you know, 15, 16, 17 area, you're talking about the, you know, Kipnis, Walker, you know, Carpenter qualifies there, guy like Castro, who, you know, he has his warts, but, you know, he could still hit, at least at Yankee Stadium, it would appear. Devin Travis, all those guys at second base, very good. Third base, very top-heavy again, but still enough meat in the middle. To me, I think outfield is the danger zone. And if you're in a five active outfielder league, I'm telling you right now, make outfield a priority. You're going to want to go over those big first basemen early. You're going to want to do all this stuff. I'm telling you right now, be very careful, because once you get about, you know, 30 deep into the outfield, it starts getting real tricky real fast. And to me, I'd rather front load my value and get an advantage with big outfield, because there's enough depth in the middle infield this year, and there hasn't been in quite some time.
Mike, what are your thoughts on this? Is there a position you feel is extremely shallow or extremely deep?
I'm right in lockstep with Joe on the outfield being somewhat shallow, especially in, you know, five outfield formats, because, you know, you're picking from 75 outfielders, and that's not including, you know, your utility spot or even two sometimes in, you know, a lot of formats. You're looking at, you know, the 75th outfielder right now is Chris Owings. That's in a 15-team league. That's something that certainly you want to look into when you're drafting. And yes, there always is values that, you know, will kind of crop up and, you know, will be mainstays on your roster the whole entire year. But that's not something you want to bank on in draft. So I completely agree with outfield being the number one position that you need to have, you need to have as your priority going into drafts. And that even goes with three outfielders too, because again, it's just not as deep as people might think it is. You know, your 60th outfielder right now is Jason Hayward. I, you know, based on what he did last year, I'm not comfortable with him being, you know, a starting asset for my team. So I think it is, you know, kind of slept on how shallow outfield really is this season, because it's so, you know, loaded up top with guys like Trout and Betts and, you know, Springer and all of these types that everybody has come to know and love. Third base and second base, I think, are the, you know, deepest positions to go with this year. You can certainly, you know, go with a you know, starting third baseman and then have your corner also be a third baseman. I've really sat with Nick Castellanos and Mike Moustakas as, you know, two of the guys I've really been targeting often in pretty much any mock draft I've done to this point. And, you know, first base, catcher, those are, you know, really the ones that I, you know, think are fairly shallow coming into this year. Again, there are really nice value picks at first base that you can kind of go with that are, you know, going a bit later. But in terms of your steady top of the line first baseman, there's just not a lot left anymore. And when we're looking at Freddie Freeman, who a lot of people were, you know, 3 years ago, a lot of people were worried about Freddie Freeman ever hitting for power. Now he's going as a top 30 pick. I think that kind of goes to show just how shallow the position has become over the last couple of years.
Yeah, and that's the big one for me, and I've mentioned it all offseason, is first base is a place where I want to get one of my big guys early on. I see what you guys mean about outfield. I think there's more of a soft middle than there is not a lack of depth. So I agree with Matt in kind of that regard, but I think there's also a soft middle in pitching as well, in starting pitching. I feel like there's some great deals to be had later on in drafts, but there's this kind of middle area in starting pitching that seems to be really soft in the middle. And so if you miss out on kind of some of the top tier options, you could face a really ugly middle of your draft trying to pick out who's going to be your elite starter. But for me, it's all about first base this year. I definitely do not want to get stuck with Adrian Gonzalez or Brandon Belt as my number one first baseman. You know, there are going to be 15-team leagues where people are starting Tommy Joseph. You know, that is a shallow position, and one I'm definitely addressing early on in my drafts if I can.
I guess since we have Joe on, not to put you guys on the spot, I guess, but he's the best person to probably ask, and all you guys chime in too. Are you guys opposed to, like, using the depth at second base, like Matt Carpenter and Daniel Murphy, and using them at first and then taking another second baseman?
I'm always a big fan. You know, look, I think it was Mike who said this too about, you know, understanding, you know, when Chris Owings is you know, qualified at outfield, all these things, you have to realize that's even more to the point of why outfield is so crucial in those deep leagues. When you're in a 15 team league, like Tout Wars, it's 15 teams, five active outfielders, right? You know, plus the utility slot. You got guys who qualified outfield who are going to be playing in other spots for other teams, so they're off the board. They're not available to you in that sense, too. So what you're saying is right, Justin, about pitching. The middle of pitching is young more than it is soft, and I think you can put them in the same category as kind of the same deal. But overall, you know, when you look at this group, I do agree that the first base – the third base, if you can get one of those Arenado, Machado type guys, if you can get those big corner guys, or at least one of them, you can. But you can definitely get by with the Moustakas. You can definitely get by and find some power there. But I'm telling you right now, if you play that game in the outfield, it's going to come back to bite you, because there's guys like Chu and Pence who are on the downside and injury prone right now on the back end of their career. And there's a lot of unproven guys, or guys with single skill sets like Adam Duvall, who don't give you a lot of across the board production. So it's a very scary, dangerous tightrope you're going to walk there.
How dare you talk poorly of Hunter Pence?
Hey, you know me. I'm the Hunter. I actually coined a phrase a couple years ago called the Pence mark, which was is like the benchmark of good production, of which, like, give me a team full of Hunter Pences and I will beat you into oblivion every year. And this was like 3 or 4 years ago. I love him to death, but, like, I got to call it what it is at this point. He is, you know, he is not stealing bases the way he used to. He's getting into his mid 30s, and, you know, that's the stuff you're gonna have to deal with. And when you're having guys like that who are gonna miss, you know, 15, 25, 30 games in a season, it adds up. And if you've got a couple of those guys, you're really putting yourself in a bad spot.
At least he's graceful, though. So,
to answer Matt's question about the multi-positional eligible guys who are eligible at first, I mean, I prefer to take those guys and play them elsewhere. If I need to play them at first, I will, especially like a Daniel Murphy or a Matt Carpenter. But my plan in a lot of drafts is to try to drown the pool at first base. So any guy that is eligible somewhere other than first base, I'm trying to snag him up and play him at another position and kind of further dilute what I feel is a really kind of shallow pool in the first base market, to try to cause panic and have people drafting guys later on earlier than they should. So, you know, if I can get a Matt Carpenter, if I can get a Daniel Murphy and slot them into other positions, I'm really stoked about that, as opposed to having to play them at first.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a big fan of drowning the pool personally. I mean, that's one of the things. But you always got to do it smartly. You got to be careful of how you do it, because you don't want to do it just to create something. You've got to make sure you're doing it where the proper value is. You can do that, and I would absolutely recommend doing that and gain some of those. Anybody who has that outfield first base eligibility too, where somebody can't sneak them in the back door, you know what I mean? You might want to pick up one of those guys later on. And also gives you leverage to trade when injuries happen. Somebody desperately needs a first baseman. You have an abundance. You're working from leverage. That's Fantasy Black Book 101. So it's a smart thing to do. I would consider doing that third base too, because you can very, very easily in the first round take a guy like, you know, Bryant, Donaldson, Machado, any of those guys. And then at a very nice value, grab a guy like Adrian Beltre or get a guy like Bregman on the upside. And then, you know, you could even take a guy like Moustakas, who might be a forgotten guy. I love that name being brought up because he hadn't made great adjustments for the injury last year. That's a guy you could stick in a utility bat, and all of a sudden you've really hurt that position. Third base is an easier place to drown the pool than first base, usually.
All right, let's talk about let's get away from positions and talk about stolen bases, because this year stolen bases, more than I think any other year in a long time, stolen bases have really been put in the forefront as a premium statistical category you need to target early. Is that something you're doing, Joe?
Well, last year in the five burning questions in the book, I actually wrote, you know, what's better to chase? Should I be paying in the draft for steals or for power? And the conclusion I made last year was for power, because you can get steals late in the draft and you can get them off the waiver wire. It's not that hard to find 20 steals off the waiver wire every year, or, you know, a couple guys who could do that. It happens. These guys come up, they have these little spurts sometimes, or some guy, you know, some utility guy who has a one-dimensional set. It's really hard to find 25 bombs. And to me, I'd always rather pay and solidify power, and then I can go around. This year is very interesting, because if you go and you look at, you know, for say the shortstop position, you know, generally speaking, there's a lot of guys on there. I think this is the best floor for stolen bases we've seen in a long time, where you've got Gordon, Segura, Rajay Davis with an everyday job. I mean, you know, Villar, all these guys with like 50 plus steal potential. And I don't remember a time where this many guys having everyday jobs and that kind of potential. So me, I say let the market kind of come to you a little bit. I don't want to be the first guy buying these guys off the board. I don't want to be overpaying for them. But in those roto drafts, I will, you know, even Billy Hamilton made a lot of good strides. And I hate myself for saying that. I want to slap myself because I hate Billy Hamilton and everything he stands for. But if you're in those head-to-head
categories. You better calm down, Joe. You better calm it down.
Well, because this is why I hate head-to-head roto, because head-to-head roto values the below-average major leaguer, the Jared Dysons of the world and the guys like Billy Hamilton, who aren't good major league ball players, but they can single-handedly win you that one category in a week. And in those leagues, I would be very aggressive for those guys, because for that very reason, it's going to be harder to win that category now. So head-to-head roto, pay extra for steals, season-long roto, let the market come to you, points leagues, you think you know what I'm going to say.
Mike, what are your thoughts? Are you targeting stolen bases early?
You're lucky that we love you, Joe, because you just straight like crushed Billy Hamilton and Jerod Dyson, both guys that we've loved on this show. So,
I was very specific about my crushing. I said you should go after them aggressively in head to head roto, because in head to head roto, they are gold mines, and you have to be aggressive, because now this year there's a lot more of those guys. You can't just rely on one of them. You're going to have one of them in a bonus. You're going to have to, if you're going to win that category every week, you got to be real careful with that. But yeah, they're below average major league ball players. Henceforth, I don't think they should have as much fantasy value.
I won't like get so mad at you. I mean, I'm a little disappointed, but I get your rationale here. So in terms of stolen base, I do want to make a request that we call the title of this show Soft Middle, by the way, because I think that saying was said probably like 20 times over the last segment. I couldn't stop. I was sitting over here in the corner dying. But in terms of stolen bases, like the whole offseason, I've pretty much been saying the same thing. Stolen bases were at a league low last year. Only 28 guys stole 20 or more bases last year. We need to make stolen bases and guys that only steal a priority, your Jerod Dysons of the world and, you know, so on and so forth. But right now, you know, I've started doing my projections, and – you know, when you look at the years prior, you know, when you look at 2015, there was 30 guys with 20 plus stolen bases. 2014, almost 40. And then in, you know, 2013, there was over 40. I'm starting to, you know, as I do my projections, I have right now at least 41 guys that are at 20 stolen bases in my projections. Now, am I completely right? Am I going to be 100% in those? Absolutely not. But there is a lot of guys in that realm that could, you know, accrue at least close to 20 bases. And I would say more than half of them are available past one pick 170 in drafts. You know, your Travis Jankowski's of the world and, you know, even Ben Revere's of the world. You know, Chris Owings is a candidate to steal 20 bases. Alan Hansen maybe in Pittsburgh. There's just a lot of guys on the lower, you know, spectrum of things that could definitely steal bases and be available on the waiver wire. All in all, I think that we're going to see regression to the mean here in stolen bases, and it won't be nearly as bad as it was last season. Is that a promise? I can't tell the future, but I do think based on, you know, just the way that the game is being played, that we'll see an uptick in stolen bases, you know, especially with it being so down last year.
I'm going to start a heavy metal kind of band called Regression to the Mean. I just want you to know.
Matt, what are your thoughts?
Along
on
with
this?
Soft metal.
Can't beat that name, right?
That soft middle opens for us.
I guess I'm kind of with you guys. I'm just letting the market fall to me. There's, like Mike said, there's a ton of guys late in draft, later in the 200 or 190 to 300 range that can steal 20 bags. Even guys like Jacoby Ellsbury, who might be a boring fantasy guy, he can get you those steals. Like, you know, Brett Gardner's around. My personal favorite, my crush for this year, Keon Broxson's down about that range. A bunch of guys like that. If you wait and you plan them out, grab a couple of those guys, you'll be okay. Rajay Davis is at 237. Like, that's a steal.
Yeah, Roman Quinn is at 390, a guy that I think a couple of us are really starting to like for this season. Mm-hmm. You know, every year there is a topic within the fantasy circles that the entire fantasy community jumps on. And it skyrockets the value of something, whether it's a position or whether it's a statistical category. There's always a theme of the year. This year it's speed, and everybody's jumping on it. And that's why you're seeing guys like Vlar going in the top, you know, 15 picks, top 20 picks in drafts, is people really want that speed early on. And we kind of over-evaluate these things. And we push these things a little bit farther than they should go. Last year was starting pitching. We're like, you have to get two studs to anchor your rotation at the beginning, you know, and everybody went pitching high and pitching hard, and everybody got burnt for the most part, you know. And that's what'll probably happen with stolen bases this year. I think people are over-evaluating this. There will be regression to the mean. And, you know, stolen bases won't be as highly valued as people are taking in drafts. Does that mean I don't want to get stolen bases? No, but it means I agree with you guys. I think you can get value later, and I'm not going to pay a premium for guys that I don't believe in their talent level. Let's move on to the next question and talk about starting pitching. Joe, where do you start taking starting pitching this year?
Well, you know, for me, it's always the same answer, which is it depends on the format you're playing. If you're playing in a points league, it's pitching. It's pitching early and often. Kershaw should be the first guy off the board. Scherzer should be second. That's how you should be. If you're in any sort of roto league, it's going to be different. Yeah, for me, looking at pitching this year, here's the thing that I would keep in mind. I would keep this in mind strongly. The first tier pitching, you know, 1 through 16, is very strong. There's a couple guys right in the peripheral, too, like the Carlos Martinez, who I think is ready for, you know, a jump. Guys like Greinke and Harvey coming off, you know, down years who might have opportunity. After that, it's very tricky. There's a lot of youth in the middle. It's a lot of guys like Taillon, who I love, and Carlos Rodon. And, you know, there's a lot of those guys, you know, that you're going to have to justify. You're going to have to worry about, you know, what they're going to do in their second year, full season kind of stuff, like the Aaron Sanchez. How much will that kind of take over? For me, I'm all about auction leagues because this allows me to kind of get the pitcher I want. I would be perfectly fine with going for, you know, a high-end Syndergaard type guy. But I think the better strategy this year, to be honest with you, is to trying to double up. Give me a, you know, if I can get a Hendricks and a Hamels, if I can get two 1As, rather than just pay all the way up for a one, whether that be rounds or in cash. To me, it's a no-brainer. Give me the two guys over the one guy just so I build my staff anchor a little bit. I've got a little bit better foundation there season-long, and I can withstand injury a little bit better too, because those teams that had, you know, like Derek Van Riper in our Tout Wars League this year, you know, he went balls to the wall, and he had Kershaw, and he paid a lot for him when Kershaw went down and killed the season. You know, he was just out of it because he had so much invested in him. So for me, give me the two guys. If I, you know, give me Carlos Martinez and Quintana, and I'll go to battle with that every week. You know, give me Yu Darvish on the bounce back, and give me DeGrom on the bounce back. You know, I can make do with that. But I think if you pay too much, you know, for the Scherzer, Bumgarner, Syndergaard area, I think you might be, you know, on the outside looking in.
Mike, what are your thoughts on this? Where are you taking starting pitching?
Well, in the Friends of Fantasy Benefits mock, I had the number 12 pick, and I ended up going with Scherzer, or I had the number 11 pick, and I went with Scherzer on the wraparound. So I, you know, if I don't get Kershaw or Scherzer, then I'm going to kind of wait a bit. And I think that Joe's point is great about points leagues, that if you're in a points league, I think early often four starters is a great strategy, because that's obviously, you know, the most important thing to kind of accumulate for your squad. But, you know, in general, if I don't get one of those top two, then I'm going to kind of wait a bit. And, you know, the guys that I've been targeting have been a little bit later. You know, I definitely like DeGrom. He's one of the top guys that I've been targeting. Carrasco, I'm in to go back on the well, back to the well with, and he's the 15th starter right now. So right around pick 60, if I don't get one of the top two guys, I will start looking to make a move in terms of my ace. But, you know, I'm just going to go out and say Zach Greinke and Gerrit Cole are the two guys that I've been trying to get on every single team, because they're just going way too late. And I think that those are two of the one A's that you can get, and they're going pretty much outside the top 90 picks right now. So if I don't get one of those top two, it's going to be a little bit later.
Matt, what are your thoughts on this? Where are you taking starting pitching?
I'm right there with you guys. I'm waiting a little bit. I'm going to grab Martinez, DeGrom, guys like that in that range. Quintana, like Mike said, Gerrit Cole, like you, Darvish, was mentioned earlier. I know he's going a little higher, but I'll pair Darvish with one of those guys is kind of what I've been trying to do. I had one team. I have Darvish and DeGrom. I like that. I have Darvish and Carlos Martinez in a mock. I like that a lot. And I think, I mean, one of my strengths as a fantasy player is, I think, finding starting pitching too. And I kind of count on that. I can find some quality on the waiver wire a little bit better than the average person can. So I kind of bank on that also. So, I mean, if it comes down in a later draft, if I need a pitcher or a hitter, I'll definitely go to the offensive end, because I'm better at finding pitcher on the wire myself personally. So I'll play to that strength too.
Yeah, we're just going to have to sweep it, because I'm typically waiting a little bit on starting pitching, at least at the upper tier. Gerrit Cole, Danny Salazar, Aaron Sanchez, Zach Greinke, all Tanaka, all pitchers going after the 90th pick in NFBC leagues. I love Carrasco, Archer. So I'm in agreement with you guys. Unless I'm getting a really nice value at the top end, if the Syndergaard sale, Bumgarner, Klubers, if they're falling a little bit farther than I feel like they should, of course I'm going to pull the trigger on it. But for the most part, I'm finding myself ending up with kind of a collection of guys who are the 1As, who last year were in the elite category, and we were talking about guys that you should take in the second and third round, but this year are going after pick 50. David Price is a guy I love. Johnny Cueto, another guy I love. I mean, these are guys that are all top-tier talents, but aren't having to pay the price we have had to in recent years. So that's definitely where I'm going with starting pitching. Let's move on to the other end of the spectrum.
How much better... out of curiosity, Joe, how much better percentage-wise is Clayton Kershaw and Max Scherzer, like RPV, compared to everybody else in the starting pitcher pool?
Well, how I break down starting pitcher relative position value is I compare them as tiers. So I take the first 16 guys, and I compare them to each other, because in essence, most teams are going to have at least, you know, if you have 15 teams, everybody's going to have probably one of these guys. Some will have two, some will have none. So yeah, that's kind of the way you have to react to the pool. So Clayton Kershaw this year is he's a 28% RPV advantage over, now keep this in mind, over the rest of the tier one pitchers. So he's still almost 30% better than the fantasy league average number one starter. That is an incredible feat. Here's the trick too. You mentioned earlier about why you front load the starting pitchers in points leagues. This is why, because if you take Kershaw and you have that 30% better at the mid level, and then you go back and you take, let's say you take a Cueto, right? After that, it's like a number two in a second round or a third round if he should make it to you, or even a guy like Kyle Hendricks. What you're going to then do is, Kyle Hendricks might be a negative 12, so he's below average negative 12 compared to Kyle Hendricks, that is, compared to like the middle of the number ones, but he's 30% or 40% almost better than the number two mid range, which means that all of a sudden now you've got a guy who's above the tier one and a number two who's well above the other number twos. And now every pitcher you take after that is going to be higher and producing at a higher clip. And that's what fantasy sports is about, me outscoring you from as many positions as I possibly can. And if I can do that consistently from every spot in my lineup, I'm going to beat you more often than not.
All right. Let's talk about closers, though. Where are you
number
guys
one are? Bestseller? See, that's why. That kind of
that's
stuff.
Right. That's good stuff, man.
No, but I mean, that's the problem is nobody wants to. How do you quantify it? This is how.
Definitely. Let's talk about closers, though, Joe. Where are you starting to take closers? Are you in for the elite guys, or are you waiting?
you're gonna love this. This is gonna be great podcast fodder. All right, here you go. I understand. You're going to do this, okay? You're going to take the very best guy you can. You're going to take Chapman. You're going to take, Kenley Jansen. You're going to take the number one top flight guys, the top three or four. And if you can't get them, don't take any. Don't take any. Go all the way down till you can and just hedge your bets. And I'm going to tell you why. Last year, if you talk about guys who were the closer for their team or just a closer period – for the entire season with no interruptions from injury, from loss of job, from trades or any other thing like that, you're talking about half a dozen guys. I did this whole thing. There's a whole write-up in the Black Book this year about that. It's a staggering thing to watch. So for me, give me the elite closer who's going to help me in strikeouts and whip and in ERA and across the board. You might even pick up some wins for me and stuff like that. Those guys are going to have a great impact. Plus, you're going to create such a foundation of save level of 35 to 40 saves. And then after that, if you can't get those guys or those guys go past you or they go out of your price range, then just wait, because the turnover is so extraordinary. The worst thing you can do is overpay for the middle guys, because that middle group killed fantasy owners last year. They killed them, and they spent all this fab all year trying to chase around those saves, and they had guys for a week as closers, and then they didn't have a job, and then this guy gapped out. It's such a disaster, and the turnover, I actually do this in the Black Book this year. I have where everybody started in spring training, each team, and then each closer that saved games for them throughout the year and took over the ninth inning job. You start to look back at this, and you go, oh my God, I want to kill myself. It is that bad. Don't overpay for the middle range guys. Just wait for the back end guys or draft those eighth inning guys who are going to take over jobs because you know who they are already. You know the guys that aren't going to hold jobs in that bottom third, and you could smell them coming a mile away. Jobs like in the Philadelphia job's going to be turned over. There's going to be a lot of jobs this year will turn over.
I couldn't agree with you more. If I'm not getting one of my top three, Chapman, Jansen, or Britton, I'm waiting for the most part, unless I see a guy just fall a little bit farther than I'm willing to let him fall. But give me a Britton and let me pair him with a Mauer, and I'm having a happy draft right there in terms of my closing pitching. So I'm right there with you, Joe. I think that middle is extremely soft and extremely volatile.
Yeah, hey, the soft middle, baby.
Soft middle. Making its way back.
But there's already, that word again.
Already you can smell from 20 on, and I have them all ranked in RPV. You can smell, Giles is volatile. Who knows what Dyson's going to be? Fernando, Rodney, and Madsen are not long for this world. You could smell it on these guys. You know exactly what's going to happen. And that's what I mean. It's like pay up, get your saves, get your elite stats around it, or to heck with it. To me, if you want to, the only guy in the middle that I can make a case for is always the Tampa closer, because Colome last year was very good, and he will be this year. And everybody from Kyle Farnsworth to Fernando Rodney to Boxberger to, Jake McGee. Has there everybody who couldn't save 40 games for the Rays? And that's because they have the magic potion there, which is they have good pitching, no offense, and they were always in close games. When they win, they're all save opportunity wins, and that's why those guys get 40 saves every year.
Mike, would you like to respond to that as the Rays fan on the podcast?
Who did I forget? Mike, who did I forget? The pantheon of great Rays closers. I get it.
Yeah,
McGee.
Rodney. Yeah, I think. Rodney was there
for
a year.
Who was after Farnsworth? There was somebody. Oh, what's his name? Soriano. Rafael Soriano. There's another one you could throw in there.
Soriano. Yeah, Soriano was there. I remember back back when the Rays finally made it to the playoffs, they had Troy Percival. They tried relentlessly.
Yes.
Right. To get Troy Percival in there. I'm like, just why is he even on the roster at this point? Joe Maddon just was relentless trying to get that guy in there. So, but even with a half an arm, he could have saved 40 games because it's just the way of the Rays world. So it's a good observation.
but people say, well, you can't, they always say this, oh, you can't predict saves. Yes, you can. Okay. Here's how you do it. You find teams with middling offenses with above average starting pitching. And the Rays historically have had pretty good pitching. They play in a favorable ballpark, and their offense has usually been underwhelming. Therefore, you will find close games, i.e., go look at the Tampa closer the last, 10 years, and you're going to find some really good save numbers there. I mean, you're going to find 40-plus in a lot of those guys. Kyle Farnsworth, Christ.
Farnsworth, he was the worst to watch too. Talking about shivering in your boots, I mean, he was the epitome of that. Soriano did that a lot too. He wasn't the most steady, as you will. It's always been kind of an adventure with the Rays closers, but they always seem to get it done. It wouldn't surprise me at all if Colome got traded this year and Boxberger got 40 saves. I mean, they always wanted to make Boxberger more cost effective, and him being out last year, while it definitely hurt the Rays as a team, he definitely became more cost effective because of it. So, I mean, it we'll see what happens, but yeah, regardless, your observation is absolutely correct. In terms of how I feel about closer, I feel that it's that same way. I've been getting either Jansen or Britton up top. I do like Edwin Diaz a lot, and the reason I like him is just because of the elite strikeout numbers, and that's definitely what we look for in closers. So I definitely like him a lot. Wade Davis, I've seen, I've actually grabbed a couple times as well. But other than that, I've been waiting for the most part. I've pretty much either grabbed Kelvin Herrera a little bit after. He's the other guy. And, other than that, I've just been waiting. So I really have nothing against the take here. Other than that, there is a lot of guys that I just look for skills, not roles. And, if you're in a holds league, for sure, there's just a ton of guys that you can grab for nothing at the end of the draft that could definitely come into saves at some point too. Nate Jones is a guy that I love, who's going extremely late. That if David Robertson gets traded, I think that he could definitely come into saves. Fernando Rodney is still going outside the top 300, although that won't be good for your ratios. He still can get saves. So this is definitely a year that you want to wait on closer.
He did have a sub one ERA in San Diego for the first half, though.
I don't know how he keeps doing it.
No one knows. He doesn't know. No one knows.
It's the hat.
It's the hat. Yeah.
It's the arrow. The arrow after the magic arrow.
Matt, what are your thoughts on closers this year?
Literally nothing to add. You guys destroyed it. If I'm not getting Chapman or Jansen, I'm waiting. So nothing to add. You guys killed it.
All right. Let's go ahead.
You want to hear the guys, by the way, the uninterrupted save guys?
Yeah, sure.
This is the list. I went into the book and I pulled it up. Zach Britton, Nate Robertson, Chapman, uninterrupted, but more than one team, right, because of the deal, and Kenley Jansen, and Jurius Familia. So how many am I up to now? Four? Is that five?
Five.
That's it. Five. Four. That's it.
Five. Francisco Rodriguez in Detroit, right?
Oh, and Francisco Rodriguez. Yeah. There you go. That's the last one. That's it. Everybody else had a time where they were not a closer, lost the job, were hurt, or whatever it is, and there was opportunity of back and forth. And it's hilarious. Some of these go back and forth between it's almost like trying to watch TMZ about who's dating who and going back to who. It's crazy. It's an insane thing, but that's pretty much what the closer position was last year.
And that's what it's been like for the last couple of years too. I mean,
yeah,
it's been extremely volatile. That's why that's why you're starting to see people actually willing to take one of the top three closers early, because you're going to get 40 saves and great ratios out of those guys.
I didn't get that. I don't get that, Mason. The people who go who say, oh, it's so volatile, screw it, I'm not going, so saves me not, no, they become more valuable. The guys who have a job, don't give it up, are going to not lose it because they're getting paid a lot of money and they're elite. why wouldn't you want to lock that in? I don't get that at all.
It's the old way of thinking. It's 10 years ago when everybody was still on the don't pay for saves bandwagon that you could get saves on the waiver wire. But like you said, if you're stuck getting saves on the waiver wire, you're spending fab you could be spending on other players. You're spending time and effort, and you're having to go and compete with the other owners in your league that are doing the same thing. So why
and you might not?
Not
get him any, and you might not have a guy who lasts in the role.
Exactly. I don't even want to tell you how much fab I dropped on Jake Barrett last year.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you dropped it on Jake Barrett. You dropped it on.
But then you get it like. But then you do get it. You do get a like Sung 1-0 for the Cardinals, and that works out. Like,
right, but for every one of him, there's three other guys that you are. Like I said, that's great if that's the one you won. But what if you didn't win that guy? You know.
Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah.
How crazy. Many people held on to Sean Doolittle, thinking they were going to get saves, or played around with Hector
Andrew Miller
throughout the year.
Andrew Miller. Yeah.
I mean, I think there are definitely guys you want to target, you know, in terms of relief pitchers that aren't getting saves. Sam Dyson was a guy that was on a number of my teams last year that, you know, worked out. But like you said, for every Sam Dyson that worked out, there was a guy that definitely did not work out if you had anybody in the Angels bullpen, you know. It's one of those things you got to pick and choose your battles. But I feel like if you can lock down a guy like Chapman, Jansen, Britton, I think you can throw Diaz into that kind of into that discussion. I think you give yourself great strikeouts to supplement if you're hurting in starting pitching. I think you give yourself great ratios. It also helps supplement your starting pitching. And you don't have to worry about saves. You can still go out and chase saves later on and have that surplus to trade from later.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%, dude.
Let's move into a few recent MLB moves. For some reason, we didn't talk about Rajay Davis signing with the A's, so I'm going to throw him in there first. Joe, what are your thoughts on Rajay Davis with the A's?
When you can't get Coco Crisp, you got to find Rajay Davis, right? I mean, that's what happened. But he's totally going to fit that role for them, and I think it's a good signing. I mean, he had a nice postseason. Rajay Davis is a guy, though. I mean, he's a little older than people realize, and I think that for fantasy perspective, it's great. He's going to play every day. He's going to steal 60 bases, most likely, if he does play every day without injury. So I think it's terrific for his value, and it's just about volume for him. And here's the thing about Rajay Davis. In his best seasons, you know, the fact that he is not a quite everyday player, there's a reason he's not quite an everyday player, because he's got holes in his game, and the longer he plays, the more he plays, the more he gets a little exposed. But in those short spurts, man, he's great 5 days a week. But you start playing him 7 days a week, you start to see little warts. But for fantasy owners, you don't care. You want those counting stats, and he'll give them to you there.
Rajay Davis has stolen at least 20 bases in every season except for one since 2007.
Wow.
I mean, and this is a guy who is extremely undervalued every year. Every year, even in the expert leagues, if you see him tout wars in labor, you see him go for $5 in AL tout or AL labor. And whoever gets him gets a steal at the end of the year. I think, you know, Davis is a guy this year that offers an extreme amount of value considering where he's going, because the A's have no one else. Like, who are the A's going to platoon him with?
They'll try.
I'm sure they'll
Matt Joyce, Jake Smolinski, hello.
Brett Ebner.
I mean, they still have to platoon guys like Stephen Vogt and Yonder Alonso.
In theory, he should have a clear path. In theory,
he should,
but
it he
is
should,
Oakland,
and he,
so.
And he should.
Probably going to hit leadoff, too, on
yeah,
the team.
He's going to hit leadoff. So, I mean, to me, Rajay Davis, I want him to be my fifth outfielder on every single team I have this year. Matt, what are your thoughts on Rajay Davis?
Oh, I'm with you. I was going to hit on this. Like like you said, he's stolen 20 bases every year since 2007. The one year he didn't, he only had 341 at bats. It was the lowest of any year. I mean, so he's a volume play. If he stays healthy, and that Detroit team, he didn't have a role and he had leg injuries. And that's it's all playing time in Oakland. He's going to be uncontested. The one worry I have is where he ends up in the second half of the year, if he gets traded or not. But you really can't worry about that. You can't control that. So just draft the skills that you know, and you know he's going to run. Contact percentage is a little bit worried. If you can deal with a guy that's going to hit 250 and steal 40 bags, which I know you can, then Davis is your guy. So,
Mike, are you on board for Rajay Davis?
Yeah, I'm on board. I don't think the power will stick. I know he hit, you know, double-digit home runs last year for the first time in his career. Yeah. But, you know, he struggled in the second half with batting average as well. And, you know, he only hit 220 in the second half, which is, you know, definitely not great. But you're getting him for the steals regardless. He's going at pick 240 right now. There's really not much to dislike about that. You know, right in front of him is Leonis Martin, Hunter Renfro. So I'm completely okay with taking a guy like Davis right there.
All right, let's go ahead and move on to the Rays signing that happened like mid-podcast last week. Colby Rasmus signed with Tampa Bay. Mike, what are your thoughts on Colby Rasmus with your new team?
I love me some Colby Rasmus. I've always liked Rasmus. I'm sure Matt has different thoughts about this since you know, obviously he came up a Cardinal. But I really like him for the Rays. You know, I mean, I think it's a better baseball move than, you know, fantasy move because at this point he doesn't hit for batting average. He, you know, is okay in terms of OBP formats, but, you know, because he can take a walk, you know, he's had 10% walk rate, you know, each of the last 2 years, but he strikes out too much. But he does do well against righties, and that's, you know, essentially what they signed him for. And I think that he'll, you know, again, you know, hit for double digit power. I don't think he'll hit 25, but it's not out of the realm of possibility. The playing time could also be an issue for him as well. Although, you know, the Rays defensively, you know, Corey Dickerson, unless they move him somewhere, I don't know exactly how they're going to fit him, you know, where they're going to fit him. So it's going to be kind of different. But I think that this is more of a depth move for the Rays. And when you kind of translate that to fantasy value, I think that makes him more of a, you know, deep NL only or AL only play. I'm sorry. He's not, you know, somebody that you're going to be wanting to look for in mixed leagues for sure. But he is somebody that can provide you some power. And that's pretty much it at this point.
Joe, what are your thoughts on Colby Rasmus?
I have no thoughts on Colby Rasmus.
Yes.
No, I mean, I just can't. I mean, Colby Rasmus, you know, it's funny too. There, once upon a time, there was a fair-haired, long-haired boy named Colby Rasmus who was supposed to be a can't-miss prospect. And
yeah,
you know,
don't remind me, Joe. I know.
I mean, and you know, whether it's stubbornness to adapt, whatever
his
it is.
Fucking dad, man. Do you hear all the stories about that?
Oh, yeah. Crazy yeah. stuff, man. But I think yeah. that's what it is. I mean, you look at these guys and they have all the talent in the world, but the inability to adapt, the inability to understand the nuances at this level that need to happen. Colby Rasmus is never, look, he's going to give you empty power. Even in a 15-team expert league, there's no way I'm touching him. It's just, he's never going to be on my roster because he has far too many negatives to his one positive, which is still the power. He still struggles. His splits are god-awful. And to me, it's just he's not fantasy material.
All right, Matt, go ahead. Trash Colby Rasmus.
No need. I will say Tony La Russa was the only one that was right at the time, huh? The Cardinals got a lot
right.
of trade for trading Rasmus in that time. They won the World Series that year largely because of the contributions they got from marginal guys that they got back from Rasmus. But, I mean, La Russa sniffed that out, that he wasn't a player, and then he would, you know, he would work with the Cardinals hitting coaches at the time, and then he'd go home on off days and go work with his dad, and his dad would teach him something completely different. He'd come back to the Cardinals, and he was doing something completely different that he wasn't doing before, and I just want him. He's a guy that's gonna. He'll be fine in Tampa. He'll be the empty batting average guy that probably produced 20 homers if you give him enough at bats. It's a low stress situation, and that's kind of him. He's just a chill guy that wants to go hunting and fishing and mess with his truck. He doesn't give a shit about baseball, so that's who he is.
Yeah, I mean, he's a guy that so I chill. Don't really want to have much to do with because the Rays love to platoon guys and they love to move guys around and try different things, and Rasmus is a guy who probably is best suited for a platoon. So on a bad lineup, he's currently slated to bat eighth in the Rays lineup. That is not a spot I want my fantasy guy to be batting in the Rays lineup. So I don't want anything to do with Colby Rasmus this year. So let's go ahead and just move on. Talk about a guy who used to be a Ray. Start with you, Joe. What are your thoughts on Drew Smyly being traded to Seattle? Is there a chance he can revive his career?
Well, you know, here's the thing about Drew Smyly. We talked about this the other day on On-Target Fantasy is, you know, a lot of times people want to overreact when people change their address in baseball, you know, and sometimes drastically. And more often than not, guys don't really change all that much, unless you're a pitcher who's not very good and goes to Pittsburgh all of a sudden, in which case you become very good right away for an extended period of time and then seem to take it with you for the rest of your life. I don't know what's in the water there, but whatever they're doing, you know, from James McDonald all the way to Ivan Nova now.
James Pittsburgh, McDonald, there's a name.
and Ray Searidge and those guys fixed him too for a little while. Now, Smiley is this. Smiley is a guy that, you know, has still been living off that very short sample size, where it was like 7 starts right at the end a couple years ago, where he was great and people saw that potential. But he was in the bullpen for a reason. He was great against lefties, righties pounded him. And Detroit was hesitant to move him out of that role. That's why they traded him in the first place to Tampa. And lefties do figure it out later. He's getting to that age now, 28, I think, right off the top of my head. I want to say he's 28, 29, right? He's probably only 28.
27.
There you go.
He'll be 28 opening day.
There you go. I always do a year ahead in the black book, so yep. You know how old he is in season. So he's 28, right? And he is going to figure it out and get better. The biggest benefit for him is not ballpark, because both ballparks are good. The biggest benefit is pitching with an offense that is probably going to be much better than the offense he's coming from. And I think sometimes confidence is the issue. Now, he gave up a lot of home runs last year, too. That's another thing. I mean, that little bit bigger outfield will help a little bit. But at the same time, I mean, I'm not Smiley for another 3 or 4 wins, maybe, based on Seattle. But I'm not rushing out to draft him. The pitcher that I want in Seattle is Paxton. And it's Paxton by a lot. I think that's the guy that's going to make a big jump this year. It's a matter of just staying on the field for him. He's putting a lot of things together, and he's about the same age as Smiley. And I could probably get him much cheaper, and you know, because Smiley's changed addresses, and everybody still has that feeling about him. But give me Paxton. I'm very high on him this year.
All right, Mike, what are your thoughts on Drew Smiley leaving your team and going somewhere else?
He was definitely the guy that I wanted gone of any of the Rays starters. So.
More like the Drew main Frowney.
Oh, wow. That just needs to be edited out. Absolutely. Absolutely the worst thing you've ever said on the show, Matt. Anyways, moving on.
I love it. I think that's it's so bad, it's amazing.
Oh, boy. Oh, I'm riveted.
Oh. I'm like crying at my own joke right now. I can't even control it.
So I love it's like know, a Chuck Norm Anderson, McDonald's one of joke. Our... Oh, wow, yeah, that's like a Norman that's actually pretty perfect.
It's more like Drew Frowney, because he's a bad pitcher. He sucks at pitching.
You no, guys we are get nerds. It. We get it, Norm. We get it. That was a great impression. I got to give it
thank you very much.
I can't even talk about Smiley this way. I just, like, all right, let me Van Damme face. So, Chuck Anderson... you know, a guy that I definitely respect on our site has Smiley as his 30th starter. And I, you know, this isn't meant for me to just trash him, but I am going to trash him. That's insane. There's no way he ends up being the 30th starter this season. I have him outside my top 60. Justin's the lowest at 74. And I think that, you know, the main thing is that I think that he's much more like last season than, you know, we saw in 2015, where he posted a, you know, 3.11 ERA and 1.17 whip. You know, the fact of the matter is that he, you know, had only a 7 strikeout per 9 in the second half. Things got worse. Essentially, he started missing less bats. He started getting ahead in the count less. He has a fly ball tendency, and you know, with the shoulder problems mixed in there, the stuff when you watch him every single time he faced a batter, doesn't matter lefty, righty, whatever. I was worried that the ball was going to go out of the park, and that was because he just, you know, when you don't have high velocity and you're leaving the ball up, that tends to be a recipe for disaster. And that's exactly what I think Smiley is. I don't think he's as bad of a disaster as last season, but I do think he's more of that guy than, you know, some of the quality times we've seen him throughout his career. So, you know, for me, you know, 230 ADP right now, I think that's just a little bit too rich for me. And, you know, there is always a price on guys. So, I mean, if he were to fall, you know, much later than that, then, you know, maybe I would go that route. But there's just other guys behind him, you know, Jarrell Cotton being one that's a hot name right now that I would take in front of him. Even Colin McHugh, Dylan Bundy's of the world. There's a long list of guys I would take in front of him.
Yeah, I mean, I may move him up from where I had him before the trade at 74. But it's not going to go up by a huge amount. I mean, you got to mix in the fact that he was god awful. His curveball, which he needs working, was not working last year. He is moving to a stadium that is historically decent for starting pitchers, but has been, you know, worse over the last few years because they moved around the fences. He's not a guy that I really want in my rotation for the most part because of his injury history, too. I mean, this is a guy that has had trouble staying on the field and delivering huge amounts of innings. So you put that all together and you go, well, if he does put it all together, he's going to have some upside. But what's the chances of that? And I don't think it's worth the gamble. So for me, I'm out on Drew Smyly until he proves me wrong otherwise. Let's go ahead. Let's talk about Tyson Ross real quick. He signs a deal with Texas. He, you know, probably won't start the year in the rotation. He's going to still be recovering from the thoracic outlet surgery. Joe, what are your thoughts on Tyson Ross this year?
Well, Tyson Ross was my biggest red flag pitcher last year in the Black Book. And him and Yordano Ventura have been the biggest guys that I would, you know, giant red flags. Here's the thing with Ross. Just walks too many guys. I mean, that's just something that's going to – I know he strikes out a lot of guys. I know the talent is there. But, you know, when you're walking that many guys, you're just setting yourself up for failure. And eventually, you're not going to be able to get out of those jams. It's just one of those things that – you know, give me the pitchers with those 3-to-1 K walk ratios, even if they don't have necessarily the K per nine. And I'm a big K per nine guy. Give me the elite strikeout arm who can get out of jams. And if I can't get that, give me the control guy. But don't give me the guy who strikes out 200 and walks 100. Those guys, eventually, everything else will inflate along with it. And whatever good he does in the strikeout category is going to undo with the ERA and the whip and other stuff. I think it's a smart move by Texas. They're in desperate need for some rotation depth. There's a couple teams out there for some desperate rotation depth that I think should have gone after him just because, you know, he's a little bit of a project. I'm still concerned about him health-wise. I think as a late-round flyer, he's worth it. But American League with that walk rate, I think I'd rather let somebody else take that gamble unless he came dirt cheap.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Tyson Ross for this year?
I'm kind of in the same camp. Thoracic outlet syndrome is a serious matter. You know, I know a couple of people that have dealt with that, and mind you, they're not getting, you know, the doctors in the care that, you know, major league ball players get, but some people don't even come back from this in general. I think the only success stories are like Chris Carpenter. And, you know, I can't really recall if there's any more.
Well, Harvey's coming back from it, too, now. So we'll see about him, too.
Yeah, Alex Cobb came back from it. The guy, Jaime Garcia. Yeah, he had it.
I will say, Chris Carpenter, though, really did it. I mean,
He came back and was actually legitimately solid again. You know, Cobb is still kind of out there. We'll see. But
Cobb had it before his breakout, and then he got injured again.
Yeah, he had Tommy John. Well, I'm not saying that those things are correlated, but, you know, just looking at Ross's value, he is the type of guy that I don't mind taking a shot on, you know, towards the very end of my draft and, you know, slotting him on my DL. But I do think that we learned, you know, last season that grabbing starters that are either coming back from injury or are, you know, kind of injured going into the season just don't work out a lot of the times. And, you know, while I love Ross and the fact that he has a career, you know, 56% ground ball rate, I love that. And I love the fact that he has a career, you know, 8.5 strikeout per nine. Those are certainly great things. But he does have problems, you know, getting a first pitch strike. And he also has problems with the walks, like Joe mentioned. He's a complete dart throw and somebody that if you're willing to at the end, very end of your draft, put on your DL slot and see what you kind of get out of him. Don't mind that at all. But if we get some reports that he's getting better and we start seeing him climb up the ranks a bit, then that's where I kind of would be uncomfortable drafting him. So I don't mind him as a dart throw.
I'll tell you what, you're going to have to, someone's going to pay too much. I can guarantee you.
I bet.
Yeah, and that person may be me. Here's the number that I care about right now. And
that solves all of our problems. Yeah, if it's drafted with you, you know, we got you.
Exactly. Here are the two numbers that I care about. The first number is 341. That is his average draft position in NFBC leagues. So right now he's going on average the 341st pick in drafts. I will be all over that value. Because the other number I care about is 212. That's how many strikeouts he had with the Padres in 2015. I mean, this guy is an elite talent. Yes, he walks too many guys. Moving the American League West isn't as good as pitching in the National League West. But it's not the division it was a number of years ago. Yeah, there's some good teams in that division. There's some really god-awful teams in that division, too. I mean, he's going to get to pitch in better stadiums than, you know, his home park, so maybe you avoid some of his bad home park starts. But for a guy who's going outside the top 300, there's nothing but upside. How many guys outside the top 300 offer 200 strikeout potential? There aren't many. You know, there's maybe one or two.
That's fine.
So it's all about value for me. I'm not going to pay a high price, but I'll pay the going rate, which is currently just way, way too low.
Yeah, I don't buy that going rate. I can tell you right now. And now that he's signed, that going rate is going to change in 24 hours.
Yeah. But I mean, who would you rather have for a season? Would you rather have Yordana Ventura or take a shot on Tyson Ross?
I'll take C.
I'll take Mike Fultonevich.
No, I'm not. You know, Dan Straley or Tyson Ross.
How about that frowny fellow? He's still around? Oh, God.
Now, of course, there are guys who are going after him that I'm looking and I'm like, ooh, yeah, I'd probably rather have Tyler Skaggs.
See, that's why I'm out on him, because there's guys after him. I don't like the home park, the walks. Everyone's touched on that. And we're all, like, quoting, you know, his 212 strikeouts in 196 innings, but that was before Thoracic Island. We don't even know what he is now.
Yeah, there's no dark throw.
Yeah, and there's guys I like around him. If I have Tyson Ross on my team, it would be because I picked him up off waivers. I'm not going to draft him. There's too many guys back in there, too many younger guys at the end of the draft that I'd rather take a shot at personally.
I can tell you right now, Tyson Ross eventually is going to be around that whatever Vince Velasquez grouping of guys is going to be. You're going to see him get up to there. He's going to be around Gray, Velasquez, all those guys that have significant warts where people are going to go, I don't want to take a guy in Colorado. Oh, Tyson Ross is there. Velasquez, his splits are terrible. Oh, he's got big strikeout potential. That's where Ross is going to eventually go by the time actual drafts start, and that's too much for me personally. But I totally understand what you're talking about.
If he starts moving that direction, that far up, then I'm probably out. I mean, right now he's going outside of the top 90 starters, and that, to me, I feel like is good value. He starts going in the top 75, top 60. Then we're gonna have some serious problems, because
if I'm gonna
he and I are gonna have a talk.
Yeah,
if I'm gonna take a guy around where Ross is now, I mean, Mike would know more about this guy. Matt Andreessen is kind of intriguing after what he did in kind of rotation bullpen swingman. Now with the trade of Frowny, he might be in the rotation now for the season. So I cannot.
Just stop.
But I think Matt Andreessen is kind of interesting. Mike would know more.
He's interesting. As I'm pretty sure I talked to Matt Andreessen with Joe Pisapia the last time I ever even mentioned this guy's name, because of he had me on for Sirius last year. That's literally the last time I talked about Matt Andreessen. So I mean, to answer your question, he's like interesting in a very like average sense. Like if you need like an AL only play, like to get you 160 innings,
Tyson probably got a rotation spot now. So I mean, it's worth noting.
Yeah, he does. He does for now.
Yeah, I don't think Matt Andreessen excites anyone. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about the last guy I think we're going to get a fit in tonight. That's Malik Smith, who comes over to the Rays after a brief stop in Seattle. He was part of the Drew Smyly deal. Matt, what are your thoughts on Malik Smith?
We did the Braves preview with me and Evan. We talked about Malik Smith. I liked him as a guy. If he got enough playing time, he was a guy to threaten 30, maybe 35 steals. And I think that's out the window now. I think there's some outfield depth in front of them. We mentioned they just signed Colby Rasmus. They have Dickerson. Sousa's still out there. Kiermaier, obviously. I mean, that's the DH spots in play there. But, I mean, that's a lot of guys in front of him. And what Malik Smith is he's a lefty that can't hit left-handed pitching. He hits right-handed pitching, but he hits a lot of balls on the ground. If he gets hits on the ground, he'll put a decent average up. It's all dependent on the wheels. He can run if he gets on. But he's an empty stolen base option, and he's less intriguing to me in this situation than he is in Atlanta. So it's disappointing to see the trade, but it is what it is.
Mike, what are your thoughts on Malik Smith and your team now?
Yeah, I think he's Kevin Kiermaier insurance, because, you know, last year Kiermaier, you know, ended up getting injured and missing a couple months of the season, and it really derailed the Rays season, essentially, because he essentially was our most important guy. So I think having Malik Smith from a baseball standpoint is a really nice guy to have. From a fantasy standpoint, I agree. I mean, he does have one amazing skill, and that's stealing bases. And he has better, you know, plate skills now than I think Billy Hamilton had when he first came up. The playing time is where it really kind of comes down. What it really kind of comes down to, and I don't think, I mean, barring health for Kevin Kiermaier, Malik Smith probably won't see the field for a while. In terms of regular fantasy, you know, 15 teams shallower, I definitely don't think he's draftable. If you're in keeper formats, I think that this is a decent decent boom to his value, just because I think that the Rays will use him the right way, and the speed always plays, and they like to be a team that's active on the base path. So, you know, in keeper dynasty, I think that he still, you know, has a pretty solid floor in terms of value. But for this season, I think he's pretty much out, unless you want to make a waiver claim halfway through the season because Kiermaier gets injured.
All right, Joe, what are your thoughts on Malik Smith for this year?
Well, I think right now he's waiver wire fodder for the most part. Only if you're in an AL-only league or something like that, you know, then you can justify it. Or a league where you have very deep with deep benches. But I just have a hard time this year seeing him making impact, barring injury. Now, that being said, you know, he's got some guys ahead of him who might be injured. But I don't know if that's worth a roster spot for me. I think it's got to be a real specific situation for me to put him on there. As the boys pointed out, you know, there is some stolen base upside there. But right now, I think there's probably better guys worth drafting. I think he's a guy worth adding potentially later on.
Yeah, unfortunately, he's got three options left, and they've got a couple guys on their bench who are either out of options or only have one left. He's a lefty bat. They need righty-handed outfielders to platoon with Dickerson and Rasmus right now. They don't need more lefties. I think Mike hit it right on the head. For this season alone, he's kind of just an insurance policy for Kiermaier. Going forward, I agree. I think there is some value at some point, but for this season alone, I think, yeah, he's waiver wire material if you see Kiermaier go down. So, all right. Well, that is going to finish things out for us today. Joe, why don't you tell people again, we reached on Twitter, and then give yourself some plugs.
First of all, let me just say, I think you guys have done a fantastic job with this show over the last couple of years. And I think
it
sounds better than ever.
Oh, thank you.
No, really. You know me. I don't blow smoke. I think everything's crap.
Well, thanks.
But I honestly mean that. I mean, I've been doing shows, you know, coming on here for a couple of years. And I think you guys are working at a different level than when we first started and working together, or, you know, doing shows together. And I think all you guys are just doing terrific here. So, first of all, keep it up. It's not easy. I know it's not. I know this is a labor of love for you guys more than anything. So what you guys are doing is the right way to go. For me, you can find me on Twitter at JoePizzaPS17. You can hit me up over there. You can go pick up the new Fantasy Black Book over there. That is going to be available on Amazon right now, iTunes in a couple weeks, so keep an eye out for that. Plus, you can also possibly get a paperback version if I can figure out how to do this on Amazon. I'm getting closer. And, of course, you can listen to me 5 days a week over on the Fantasy Sports Radio Network.
Mike, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter at Mike Werner, FWFB. Check out all of the team previews. I have a couple myself coming out this week, so make sure you check those out. I'll still be writing for Baseball HQ this season. And check out my stuff on Fantasy Pros as well.
All right, Matt, why don't you tell people where you can reach and what you're working on?
Yeah, MD Tomp on Twitter. Joe, thanks for coming on. Thanks for the kind words. I appreciate that. We got all the team previews coming out. Prospect Minute podcast with me and Justin. I think those are going well. It's definitely a labor of love, like you guys mentioned. Read the Prospect Companion pieces and read all the or listen to all the team previews. It's good stuff out here, so thanks.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. You can email me or the show, friendsoffantasybenefits@gmail.com. Read all my baseball stuff either on Fangraphs or on friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Definitely check out all the things we got on the site, though. A lot of ranks, podcasts, doing almost two podcasts a day for 6 weeks straight. We're about halfway through, so hopefully you're enjoying all of that. If you can give us a 5-star review, that really helps us out. So that will wrap us up. For Joe, Mike, Matt, and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic baseball season.
Every night I get you on the telephone. We sleep and we talk and we play till the dawn. Trying to get a handle on who we are. Sleep all night with the phone off the hook. Falling in love is never by the book. Getting close beneath the blanket of a million stars.
have a soft middle baseball season.
Soft middle.
Regression to the mean.
Regression to the mean.
Drew Frowney.